Okay. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me and allowing me to participate with you. I'll just echo Rabbi Zobin's comments, and that the idea of COVID has certainly presented tremendous challenges for all of us. But on some level, it's shrunken the world a little bit and even further, and it allows us to convene me in Eretz Yisrael, you in London, and again, the world is shrinking as we are experiencing it. And I do thank the you for the opportunity. I'll just share that most of what I'm about to say to you is things that I learned from my wife. My wife is an educator at MMY, which is also a seminary that has a close relationship to the London community. And a lot of the Torah that you'll hear from me is my word, is my mouth, but it's her Torah. So I wanted to discuss a little bit about Megillat Esther and perhaps some lessons that we can derive in our day from the Megillah itself. And I want to start with a look at two very, very perplexing Chazal, statements of Chazal, that really are very, very hard to understand. And perhaps with the vision of these in the background, the Chazals in the background, then to get a sense of insights into the Megillah itself. So the first Chazal that I'd like to point to is a Rambam. The Rambam is really quoting Yerushalmi. The Rambam is found at the end of Hilchos Megillah, Perek Beis, Halacha Yudches. And the Rambam tells us that Kol Sifrei HaNevi'im, the Kol HaKsuvim, all of the Nevi'im and all of the Ksuvim, Asidin Libatel Limot HaMashiach. When the Mashiach comes, all of this Sifrei Nach are going to become batel, are going to become nullified, and they will be no longer. Chutz MiMegillat Esther. Except for Megillat Esther, Megillat Esther will survive Yemot HaMashiach. Harehi Kayemet Kechamisha Chumshei Torah Ukehilchos Shel Torah, Kishalacha Shel Torah Shebaal Peh, She'enon Betelim Le'olam. Just like the Chumash itself, that's not going to be nullified during the time of Mashiach, so too Megillat Esther will not be nullified. Everything else is going to be batel. And the Rambam continues, and he says, Ve'af al pi shekol zikaron hatzaros yivatel, she'nemar, ki nishkechu hatzaros harishonos v'kinis tumei einai, even though all the other tzaros that we have will become batel in the future, yemei hapurim lo yivatlu, she'nemar, v'yemei hapurim ha'ela lo yavru mitoch ha'yehudim v'zirchum lo yasuf mizaram. The days of Purim, the Megillah, and the story of Purim, that will not become batel even during the time of Yemos HaMashiach, even though the other Svarim of Nach will become batel. Very strange, very striking, but that is what the Rambam records in the name of the Yerushalmi. The Ravid just comments on the side over here, and he calls it in a very caustic formulation. The Ravid says, Davar Hedyotos Huzeh. This is the words of a hedyot, the modern English word idiot comes from the ancient word hedyot. These are common. This is not words of a hedyot. Kiloyva tell safe from Mikol Svarim. There will no Svarim of Nach are going to become batel. She'ein sefer she'ein bo limud. We will learn something from the Dvarim of Nach for all times. Aval kach amr, what it means is we might not read them publicly. We might not have a public kriya, but certainly the Sfarim themselves will not be batel. But he understood the Rambam literally, as we will understand the Rambam, that the other Sifrei Nach are indeed going to be batel, except for Megillat Esther. And question number one is, what then is the uniqueness? What is the survivability, the endurance that Megillat Esther has vis-a-vis all the other Sifrei Nach? That's question number one that we want to deal with as a background issue. And the second question I have is based on a very famous Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Peches, where the Gemara describes the Kriyas HaTorah that we read just 2 weeks ago, Vayityatzvu B'tachtit HaHar. B'nei Yisrael stood on the bottom of Har Sinai. And what does this mean, that they stood underneath the Har? So the Gemara has the following famous statement, Melamed Shekofa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem Es HaHar Kegigis. Hashem overturned the mountain over the Jewish people underneath the Har like a barrel, the Amar Lehem. And Hashem said to B'nei Yisrael, Im Atem Mekabim HaTorah Mutav. If you want to receive the Torah here, good, very good. V'im lav, and if you do not accept the Torah right here and now, shom tehei kfuraska. I'm going to take this mountain, I'm going to drop it on you, and this will be your burial place. And Amar of Acha bar Yaakov, mikan modor rabba le'oraisa. This gives the Jewish people a certain excuse if we don't fulfill the mitzvos. We have a certain excuse after all. We took it under duress. It was foisted upon us. We didn't have a choice. So how can we be compelled how we be punished if we do things wrong. And Amar Rava, no. Afal pichem hadar kibluhu bimei Achashveros. So Chazal tell us that we re-accepted the Torah during the time of Achashveros. Dichsiv, as it says, kimu v'kiblu hayehudim, kimu masha kiblu kfar. In other words, what the Gemara is telling us is that that which we accepted under duress, under the pressure, the force of this mountain held over our head at Har Sinai, so when it came to the time of Achashveros, there we became willful acceptors of the Torah. We bought in, we opted in, kimu v'kiblu hayehudim, we were mekabel once again, ma shekiblu kfar. And again, once again, what exactly is the message, the deeper idea that is being shared to us by this Gemara? What does it mean that we were forced to accept the Torah? What happened to Nasav and Nishma at Har Sinai, that it was under duress? What is that idea? And what does it mean that during the time of Achashverosh, we re-accepted, we re-energized our relationship to Torah Hashem at that point in time? What exactly was the magic that happened during the time of Achashverosh? That's our second question. I'll just make a point, a side point, but the She'iltos d'Rav Chai Gon just makes the comment that we have a practice that anytime we have any significant celebration of Torah study, so we make a party, we make a siyum when we finish the Masechet, there is, at Kabbalah HaTorah, the Ramban tells us they brought karbanos, they had a festive meal. Any significant accomplishment in Torah study or Torah acceptance warrants a suda. Those who were learning the Daf Yomi a couple of weeks back, we learned that there is a mitzvah to have a suda on Chag HaShavuos because that is a reenactment of a Kabbalah HaTorah, a suda. And the Shiltos writes that the reason we have a Sudas Purim, a big party, a festive meal on Purim, is because kimu v'kiblu hayehudim, we re-accept the Torah. Any re-acceptance of Torah mandates a Sudas Mitzvah, just like a Siyum. But once again, what was the nature of the Kabbalah HaTorah that we had at Purim? And what exactly is the duress of Har Sinai and the nature of the Kabbalah HaTorah Purim? And again, the Rambam, what is the enduring quality of Megillas Esther, that it will survive, whereas perhaps the other Sifrei Nach will not survive. So that's the agenda we'll explore over the next 15-20 minutes to get a sense of what's going on. And I want to start with a look of the theme, the clear theme of Megillas Esther. We'll go into some details of the Psukim as well, but the theme of Megillas Esther, and this is throughout, as we understand, is the idea of Nes Nistar, is that the Nisim of the Megillah are hidden to us. There are no overt, there's no Kriyas Yamsuf, there's no overt Nes in Megillas Esther. The Shem Hashem does not appear in Megillas Esther. The Nes, whatever, however we describe the Nes, happened in Chutz La'aretz, a place where Hashem is hidden from us. There are no Nisim Gluyim. It's that during a period of time in Jewish history, which is the end of the Nevuah, where we don't have the direct speech of Hashem to his Nevi'im. And Esther, the very name Esther, comes from the word Haster Astir, that Hashem hides himself from us. Hashem, we know, we're told, the message of the Megillah is Hashem runs the world in a certain perfected way, but sometimes it's behind the scenes. Hashem is the master puppeteer, but we don't exactly see everything at the moment, but then at the end, things start to fall into place. And that is really a clear theme in Megillas Esther. We'll go through a few ideas related to that, but if we were to think a little bit of any story in Tanakh that has certain similarities to Megillas Esther in terms of this idea of Nes Nistar, of Hashem running the scene. We don't really see Hashem overtly, but he's certainly there in the background. Again, as I say, the master puppeteer. Any other story in Tanakh, in particular in Chumash, that seems to have this commonality, this similar theme. And I think if you think about it, and we'll take a look, is the story of Yosef and his brothers is strikingly similar to what we find in the Megillah. And indeed, there's a beautiful comment that is made in Esther Rabbah, in the Midrashim, which says, in the name of Rav Benaya b'shem Rabbeinu Levi, Omar, he said, Baneha shel Rachel, the children of Rachel, Nisan Shaveh, Ugdulasan Shaveh. Their miracles were similar, and their greatness was similar. What are we referring to when we see that when we speak about the children of Rachel? So one of course is referring to Yosef HaTzadik, the son of Rachel, and the other, Binyamin, had a great grandson. We're told in the beginning of the Megillah that Mordechai came from, was an Ish Yemini. He was from Binyamin, his offspring. He comes from Rachel, And says the Medrash, there's a linkage, there's some kind of connection between the Bnei Rachel, the sons of Rachel, Yosef on the one hand, and Mordechai on the other. And again, in a very, I'll just read you the few words of the Medrash, but the Medrash makes the following comment, is that in both cases, it points to two similarities. The Medrash points to two, so we'll highlight a lot more. But number one, by Yosef, we're told Yosef had a struggle with Eshes Potiphar. She wanted to seduce him. And she spoke to him day after day after day to go ahead and try and seduce him. Vayhi kitabra el Yosef yom yom. Every day she approached him, tried to convince him. Velo shama eleha. And he had the strength, the internal strength, the fortitude to not go ahead and succumb to her entreaties. That's found in Bereishis Perek Lamed Tes Pasuk Yud. In our Megillah, we're told that every day Haman was adamant that Mordechai bowed down to him, that he go ahead and show him proper respect. And every single day, by he be'amram elav yom yom, same exact lashon, every single day, and once again, velo shama aleihem. Mordechai would not listen. This is Perek Gimel, Pasuk Dalet in the Megillah. Mordechai would not listen to the entreaties, to the persuasiveness of Haman and his men to cause Mordechai to bow down. Once again, Mordechai was steadfast in his commitment to Torah and Hashem. We're told by Yosef, Vayoser paro es tabato me'al yado, that Yosef takes his ring, his signet ring, off of his finger. Vayitin ata al yad Yosef, and gives it to Yosef. Vayalbeis oso bigdei sheish, and Yosef is adorned in majestic royal garments. Vayarkevoto b'merkeves ha-mishne, he rides on the chariot of the king, second in command, asher lo vayikru lefanav avrech. So Yosef is carried around as the Mishnah Lamelech, as second in command in the house of Paro. And of course, we find the same exact thing by Mordechai. Vayosar HaMelech es tabato asher ha'vir mehaman, vayitna leMordechai v'nosna halavush v'asus, v'irkivo al asus v'kar lefanav kochay asel ish asher ha'melech hafetz bikaro. So those are a few parallels, both textually and thematically, but there is so much, so much more. So just again, to highlight some commonalities between the Yosef story and the Megillah and the Mordechai and Esther story. So first of all, we have a person reaching a very, very high position in the foreign government, in a Gentile government. He becomes Mishnah Melech. Of course, Mordechai is in a high position. Esther is in a high position, and they use that position in the foreign government to help the Jewish people. And Yosef, of course, does that to bring food to all of Mitzrayim, but also food to his brothers. Initially, Yosef is taken by force. He's in jail. He's taken by force. Esther, initially, as becoming the queen to Achashverosh, she too is taken by force. In both cases, Yosef's identity is hidden from his brother. His hidden identities, he hides his identity from his brother, only later to reveal that identity. Esther, as a Jew, her identity is also hidden in the court of Achashverosh, only later to be revealed. In both cases, there's a lack of sleep that becomes a king's lack of sleep, or troubling dreams that become a centerpiece to the story. Paro, of course, has his fitless nights. Vayikatz Paro, in the middle of the night, he wakes up, these dreams that are bothering, that are causing him angst, which Yosef, of course, has to interpret. And of course, Balaila Hahu Nodedoshnas HaMelech, that in the middle one night, Achashverosh could not sleep. He wakes up, he wants the Sefer HaZichronos to be read. And in these situations, again, Yosef is remembered as a result of that fitless night of sleep. He's called in, interpret the dreams. Mordechai, of course, as Achashverosh opens up the Sefer HaZichronos, Mordechai is remembered and is going to be rewarded for his activity earlier on with Bigson and Seresh. In both cases, there is the hanging of a rebellious officer or his henchman. Of course, the Sar HaOfim in the Yosef story is, his dreams are not interpreted favorably in the eyes of Paro. He's going to get hung. Haman Ubanav, of course, are hung. In both stories, the identity of our protagonists, Yosef and Esther, are both revealed at a mishteh yayin, at a mishteh, at a party, at a celebration. Yosef has his mishteh with his brothers, and he can't, vayisapeh, he can't hold it in anymore. And finally, he shares that his identity, who he is, and he says, it's all good. I'm not angry at you, and I'm not upset at you. Esther also, at a mishteh yayin, finally reveals her identity to Achashverosh, to Haman. I'm a Jew. I want us, our people, to be saved. And the most important, clearly the most important and most striking commonality is in both stories, you don't find the Shem Hashem. Yosef's travels from the time, and I'll just again cite a few psukim, but Yosef's travels from the time that his brothers, his father sends him to find his brothers. Go find your brothers. This is in Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Yudalet. Yaakov says to Yosef, go try and find your brothers, see what's going on. He goes to the area of Hebron, to Shechem, and he finds this mysterious person, this unnamed person. He asks this Ish, where, you know, have you seen my brothers? Have you seen anyone? And of course, Rashi tells us this Ish was no random Ish. It was Gavriel, and that begins the Malach Gavriel, that begins Yosef on this path of heading down towards Mitzrayim and again, Hashem is not here, but event after event, sold by Yishmaelim, sold by Medanim, ending up in the house of Potiphar, interpreting, becoming the leader there, being sent to jail, becoming a leader in the jail, becoming a dream interpreter in jail, being pulled out to the house of Paro, and finally rising to the ranks of Mishneh LaMelech. You don't see the Shem Hashem at all in the story of Yosef. Hashem, yes, orchestrating the events, which everyone understands Hashem is orchestrating events at the end of that story, in Perek Memhei, Pasuk Hei, Zayin, Ches, Tes, where finally Yosef HaTzadik reveals himself to his brothers, and he tells them, Va'ata al te'atzvu, do not be upset, Va'al yichar beinechem, don't worry about the fact that you sold me into slavery, because the whole thing was set up. Hashem set this up so I would be able to provide food for you. So I would, yes, this is the beginning of the story of Shibud Mitzrayim, being Avodah Mitzrayim, part of the fulfillment of the Brit Spain Abisarim that was given to Abraham Avinu, that we'd be a ger in an Eretz Lolahem, but we'd be redeemed. And by Yishlacheni Elokim Lifnechem, Hashem brought this about. Lasum Lachem Sheiris, to go ahead and save you. And this is all, and Yosef expresses clearly, this is all Hashem operating behind the scenes. That's in a certain sense the pattern of the Esther story as well. Esther and Mordechai, everything being orchestrated, everything, the master puppeteer setting everything up. And in fact, you look at the Megillah, and you go through the Megillah, and you see like it's perfect. We open up. There's no strife. The Jewish people are successful in this Persian society. Ahasuerus has this dramatic party, not such a frum party, but a dramatic party, and the Jews are part of it. And in this party, Vashti has the episode with Vashti. She becomes dethroned, and we need a new queen. And Esther, of all the ladies, of all the women in the entire kingdom, it's Esther who is chosen. In that middle of the night, Perek Beis, Big Son Viserys have their plot against the king. It happens to be Mordechai overhears that plot. In the middle of the night, again, Paro can't sleep. The Sefer HaZichronos is opened up. Haman is raised to a certain posture and a certain place in that kingdom. And Mordechai is not willing to bow down to him. Lotteries are drawn. Haman says, I have an agenda, I have a plan, I need the bracha of the king to destroy the Jewish people. A lottery is drawn to kill Bnei Yisrael on a given date, on a certain time. Esther has two mishtas that she makes. She reveals herself, and all of a sudden, again, everything that Haman had planned so perfectly, date, his plan was when Ahasuerus says, I want someone who did good by me, I want to give cover to someone, he speaks to Haman, who is Asher HaMelech HaFetz Bikara, I want to give someone cover. Haman, of course, arrogantly and self-centeredly assumes that it's about him, and of course it's about Mordechai. It's Haman who, in a certain sense, gives Mordechai the cover. Haman, who wants to destroy Mordechai, is ultimately the one who's going to be giving Mordechai the cover. He's going to be leading him around in the big day Malchus on that regal horse. And this is the theme that emerges of Vinahafochu. Everything is set up in a certain way, and everything backfires. Everything boomerangs. The same exact tree that was Mordechai was supposed to be hung on, actually Haman built that tree for himself. And the same exact plan. Yes, I'm gonna be the one who's gonna be the Mishneh LaMelech. I'm gonna be the one, says Haman, who's gonna be carried out on that horse, and I'm going to have the king's ear. So ultimately, it's Haman who is leading Mordechai around town on that horse. It is the very day that the Pur fell out, that was supposed to be the day that all the Jews were going to be destroyed. That's the day that the Jews rose up and did milchama against Haman and his men and actually killed their enemies. And in a certain sense, that one of the other messages that we see over here is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashem is Makdim Refua Lamaka. All the cures of the ails that were to before, potentially to before the Jewish people, they were all the cure. The Refua was all there waiting to happen. Esther was already the queen before Haman hatches his plan, but Esther's in place. Mordechai is in place before the plan is hatched. He overhears the plot of Bigson Viserys to kill Ahasuerus. It's all there in advance. And there's a very famous Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah where Hashem, the Goyim, the Gentiles, approach Hashem and say, how come we're not getting the Torah? How come we're not getting Schar? After all, we built bridges and we built cities and we did all of these wonderful things in the world, and we did it all so the Jews could learn Torah. That's why we did it, says the Goyim, the Romans. To HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says back, Shotim Sheba Olam. That's not why you did it. You did it for your own aggrandizement. You did it for your own ego. You did it for your own pleasure. You didn't do it for the Jewish people. And ultimately, yes, the Jewish people will inherit all of those things, but that was not your agenda. Haman had his agenda, and everything gets v'nafochu. This is why the Rambam tells us in Per Beis Halacha Aleph, that HaKorei, if a person of Hilchos Megillah, if a person reads the Megillah Lemafreya, if he reads the Megillah out of order, you're not Yotze. The order is critical. It's not enough just to read all the Prakim. You have to read it in the right sequence, because in this story of kings and queens, it's so dramatic. There's an evil villain. It could be modern day television. I don't watch much television, but if I would coin a term for this saga, I might even call it the Game of Thrones. The idea of these kings and queens, evil villains, plots and plans, etc., is all here in place. And we don't see Hashem at all. And Hashem is not mentioned once. Yet, Hashem operating behind the scenes in the most dramatic way. So what exactly, perhaps going back now to our two chazals, our two midrashim, what exactly is the idea? So question number one, we had the Rambam. The Rambam tells us that when it comes to all the Sifrei Nach, all the Sifrei Nach will become batel except for Megillas Esther. What's unique? What's special about Megillas Esther? I think what's unique about Megillas Esther is, yes, when it comes to time of Mashiach, Be'ezrat Hashem, the world will see Hashem. He'll be recognizable. We'll see the Nisim, we'll see the unique Hashgacha, Pratis, that Hashem, how he runs the world. But you know what we might not see? We still might not appreciate in a very, very real way the fact that I have in my backyard, I have a gorgeous, beautiful, beautiful orange tree in my backyard. And every so often, I just go out there and I just regale and relish the fact that we put seeds into the ground, this seed, and it broke in the ground, in dirt. And then somehow a piece of wood, a brown piece of wood, started to grow and started to emerge, year after year, getting taller and taller. And from that ground, brown piece of wood, somehow these green leaves start to emerge out of a brown piece of wood, out of dirt, out of a seed that broke up. And then all of a sudden, in the wintertime, I also have a pomegranate tree that's starting to blossom now. These flowers start to blossom. Beautiful smelling flowers, these white, gorgeous little flowers. And then as those petals start to fall, this small little, tiny little green little circular thing comes out of those flowers as the petals fall. And then that green little thing starts to grow. And it grows bigger and bigger and bigger. And then that green starts to turn yellow, and then that yellow starts to turn orange, and then come Hanukkah time, I harvest my 300, 400 oranges on that orange tree. And it's nothing short of magical. From a piece of wood, from dirt, from nothing, comes a fruit. You're not going to appreciate perhaps during the time of Mashiach, we won't appreciate that. We won't appreciate Hashem behind the scenes. We might see amazing miracles, amazing Kriyat Yamsus, but we're not necessarily going to appreciate HaKadosh behind the scenes, the Nes Nistar, the hidden miracles of babies being born every single day, of people, yes, Rahman al-Islam, unfortunately, people are getting sick, but also the how unusual that is, how normal, how we're so used to people being healthy and people, the world working normally. We're shaken when the world turns upside down. But to appreciate Hashem behind the scenes, the word ha'olam, Hashem in the olam, comes from the word he'elam, that Hashem is hidden. The word teva, nature, means tavua, sunken. Hashem is sunken. He's not always visible in nature, but that's what goes on. I remember when my kids were much younger, I took them once to a big, big circus in New York, in Madison Square Garden, a Ringling Brothers circus, the three ring circus. Dramatic, dramatic circus, and they're trapeze artists, and there's guys being shot out of a cannon, and there's the clowns, and there's everything's going on, elephants and tigers and everything. And I remember I had my 4-year-old son with me, and it was amazing. And then in the front, in a couple of seats in front of us, there were these children with these lights, just whirling these lights in a circle around them. And my son, all he could focus on was those lights, those circular lights going around. I said, look at the elephants, look at the tigers, look at the trapeze artists. You're missing the show. You're missing everything. You're focusing on this Narishkeit. You're focusing on, and you're missing the big picture. And that's what Megillas Esther is telling us. Don't lose sight. Don't lose sight. Yeah, the day-to-day, the Nes Nistar, Hashem is the master puppeteer. That's we're going to need that during Yemos Mashiach. We might see big miracles, but you also need to see and appreciate the little things, the small things, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu behind the scenes. And perhaps that's the message of the second Medrash as well. Chazal tell us that during the time of Kabbalah HaTorah, so Hashem overturned a mountain and we were under duress. We didn't have a choice. Take the Torah or you will be buried under this mountain. What choice did we have? So perhaps that's just a metaphor. And perhaps the idea that the Gemara is telling us is at Har Sinai, where we literally heard the Yad Hashem, that we heard the Dvar Hashem. We literally just came out of Mitzrayim, Eser Makos, Kriyas Yamsuf. Things were so clear to this generation. There was a Dor Deah. There was such a level of clarity that perhaps there was no Bechira Chavshis. Of course, Nasa V'Nishma. It was as if the mountain was held over their head. They didn't have a choice. There was such clarity. It was so evident. It was so obvious that, of course, Nasa V'Nishma. They had to accept the Torah. There was no other option. The clarity was so there. However, generations later, so we're in Persia, and there's the story of Haman and the Ahasuerus and everything that goes on. And at that point in time, so we didn't have the same clarity. We were in Golus. There was no longer Nevi'im. There was a sense of Hester Panim. The shame Hashem was not overt. There was an ability to choose yes or to choose no. It was not so patently obvious. And therefore, at that point in time, when the Jews came up and said, yes, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, we went ahead and reconnected to Torah Hashem. We re-accepted the Torah. This time, not under duress, this time by choice. And therefore, perhaps that's the idea, is again, Nes Nistar, when Hashem is behind the scenes and sometimes he picks his head, sometimes not, but it's harder to see. You have to look with greater eyeglasses to go ahead and find him. But that's the challenge of Megillas Esther, and that's the unique opportunity. That's the Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. Then at Har Sinai, it was so obvious. It was as if a mountain was held over their head. There was no choice but to say Nasa V'Nishma. And that was the re-Kabbalah HaTorah at a time when there was less clarity, Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. There's a beautiful pasuk in Parshas Beshalach, which tells us that the man was given, came down from heaven every single night, every single day, 5 days a week, one portion, Erev Shabbos, the second portion, Shabbos, no portions. And Hashem says, Hineni mamtir lachem lechem min asher, I'm going to rain for you bread from the heavens. Amazing. What an amazing, amazing miracle. Yet, the pasuk doesn't say it was a miracle. The pasuk says, why did Hashem give us man? He gave us man, the pasuk says, leman anasenu ha'ilech b'torah simlo. It was a test. It was a test. A lot of different pshatim are given by the mefarshim what that test was. But one of my children suggested a beautiful pshat that I want to share, which is in line with this idea, is that imagine 40 years in the Midbar, and 5 days a week, Sunday through Thursday, one portion of manfel, and Friday, a double portion of manfel, and Shabbos, no portion of manfel. And it happened week after week, year after year, time after time. And at some point, if that's what you're born into, and that's what you see every single day, what you start to think is, you know what? That's not so special. That's nature. That's just the way of the world. That wood can somehow produce a delicious, sweet orange. It's just what happens. It's just the way of the world. So the challenge, the nace of the month, 40 years, day in, day out, is to appreciate that these are nisim that are happening all the time to us. And that perhaps is another core message of Megillas Esther. I want to close with one last point. And there is a turning point in the Megillah, which is worthy of just noting. And that turning point is found because, again, it's so perfect. It's a perfect story. And we can kind of get numb to it because we read it twice a year, every single year. But if you imagine you saw this for the first time and you're learning the story, it's there's something perfect about it. And Hashem has it perfectly organized. But there's one moment which is clearly the turning point of the Megillah, the most important pasuk perhaps in the Megillah, and that is in Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Aleph, where Esther is nervous because Mordechai says, you got to go into the king, you got to go into Ahasuerus, you have to, you know, plea for the Jewish people's causes, otherwise Haman and his nefarious plot might indeed be successful. And Esther says, but I haven't been called. It's been over 30 days since I've been called. And it's very possible that when someone gets called, goes into the chatzar hapnimus of the king, asher lo yikarei, the response is that the king kills you. And how do I know? How do I know that I can do this? I'm not sure this is going to work. I'm going to get killed. And Mordechai says in an amazing pasuk, says Mordechai, tell Esther, do not vacillate from this move. Ki im hacharesh tacharishi ba'es hazos, if you vacillate, if you don't take this step, revach v'atzala yamot la'yudim imakam acher. We're going to get saved. It's going to happen, but it's going to happen from somewhere else. Va'at ubeis avich tovedu. Umi yodea im le'et kazot hikat l'machus. This is exactly the reason that you were placed in this position for this particular moment. And Esther is no doubt scared. She's scared. She tells all of the Jewish people, fast for me for 3 days. She's scared. I'm risking my life. But this is what your mission is. This is why you're placed here and right now. And she takes the step. And again, like everything in life, Hashem has it all worked out. But that does not relinquish our responsibilities. We have to take the first step. We have to make the move. There's one element of Mesiras Nefesh in the Megillah, a human intervention, so to speak, and that's Esther, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Aleph. She risks her life, but with that is the turning point of the Megillah, and everything changes from then. Ahasuerus promises her Chatzia Malchus, and that begins the demise of Haman. It has to start with us. Hashem will take care of everything else. The chips will topple, but we have to move that first domino. And once we do, then things fall into place. We find this throughout Chazal. We find it throughout Jewish history. The most obvious is, of course, Nachshon ben Aminadav, who has to trigger Kriyas Yamsav. Hashem's going to go ahead and split the sea. He's going to do all the heavy lifting. But we have to trigger. We have to initiate. We have to take the first step. And that first step is to take that leap of faith, to be Moser Nefesh, in order to go ahead and trigger these miraculous events. So that, to me, is the core lessons, the core ideas, is that we find that throughout everywhere. You know, we're living, no doubt, if one is paying attention, certainly to the past 75 years of Jewish history with Medina Yisrael and what that means for us living here, for the diaspora, for everyone. But to hear, as Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, Hashem knocking, and waiting for us to open the door. COVID-19 has been such a challenge for the entire world. But there's no doubt Amamin understands their messages that we're supposed to glean, we're supposed to take away and learn from, and somehow, you know, be propelled with. These challenges are supposed to make us bigger, make us better. And we have to look at nature that is happening around us, but realize there's no such thing. It's all Yad Hashem, it's all Hashem orchestrating. Learn the lessons that we can, derive the messages that we can, elevate ourselves to the best way that we can. That, to me, is the core, the yesod of Megillas Esther, the Nes Nistar, that sometimes we don't see Hashem explicitly, we don't see him overtly, but clearly he's running the show. He's behind the scenes. We have to find him. We have to search him out. We have to seek him. And at some times, we have to be Moser Nefesh. We have to make that first step. And then, Be'ez Hashem, just like we saw, B'yamim Ahim, the Geula of Klal Yisrael in the Esther story, we should be Zoche, Mirtz Hashem, B'zman Hazeh, to see Geula from the challenging times that we currently live in, and the ultimate Geula of Yemos Mashiach, where Megillas Esther will still be with us, and we'll still be able to learn her lessons. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Isaacson. We now have a few minutes for questions and a couple of things.